David Sparks and Jason Snell spent their careers working for the establishment. Then one day, they'd had enough. Now, they are independent workers, learning what it takes to succeed in the 21st century. They are free agents.
Welcome back to Free Agents, a podcast about being an independent worker in a digital age. I'm David Sparks, and joined by my fellow host, Mr. Jason Snell.
Hey, David, how's it going?
Great, Jason. Happy Halloween.
Oh, yes. As we release this episode, it is scary, spooky Halloween, the most frightening of all days for independent workers.
Yes.
Because there's, like, people roaming your neighborhood in costumes. Small people.
Yeah, I know. It's and they want candy. So they get very angry if you don't give it to them. Mm-hmm. I have some Halloween themed stuff, I think, for the listeners. If you're home tonight and you want to get in the mood, if you're a subscriber to Relay, Jason did an excellent Spooky Manor bonus content this year. That was with Gray and Mike that I listened to. I listened to it too early. I guess I'll have to go back and listen to it again on Halloween, but it's very good.
I chose it. I didn't choose it for the Halloween theme. I just chose it because I thought it was the next one we should do, because we also did one that was a sort of Wild West themed. But it is Halloween themed. It is. They're in exploring a haunted house. So if you aren't a Relay member, you should check that out. You can support free agents. You go to relay.fm/membership, and it's in there, along with lots of other stuff, including our conversation about what we do when we're not working, which is
in there
too. And a lot of other great bonus stuff too.
Yeah, but Spooky Manor would be great to listen to as you're giving candy out tonight. So
you can hear me be a spooky computer in a spooky video game that they're playing, text adventure game that they're playing. Also, I will point people to The Incomparable. All October, we've been doing a Dungeons and Dragons thing on the Total Party Kill podcast that's set in a haunted house, and there are bats and vampires and a Frankenstein. And all sorts of other stuff. Werewolves are in there. Yeah, there's a lot of ghosts. There are ghosts too, spooky ghosts. It is a full-on haunted house D&D adventure, and we started it a couple years ago and have been doing it every October, and it wraps up today. In fact, if you're listening to this on Halloween, the last episode of that story is today, so it's complete, and you could go listen to the whole Save-Off Manor Shocktober story if you'd like.
Did you know there's a D&D about Star Wars? There's a whole like D&D series and rules and all that.
Yeah, the amount of role playing on different subjects is kind of staggering. Like if you can dream it, there's a Marvel Superheroes one that they made in the 80s that I used to play when I was a kid. Yeah, there are lots of them that themed too.
I have to find a group of Star Wars nerds. I want to do this, but I don't know even how to get it started. But I'm going to figure it out at some point.
Yeah, I bet it would be fun. So this is a new kind of episode for us. Everybody out there has remembered that we interview people and then we do topics, but we're going to change it up. 33 episodes in, 66 weeks into this show. It's time to, I mean, this could be a topic unto itself, which is it's time to reflect and adapt.
We had a big list of topics that we wanted to cover, and I feel like that was good that we did those topics, you know, the single subject shows. But we kind of got a lot of that out of our system. And the thing we found is, as we get deeper into this free agent journey, there's stuff that is happening to us that we want to talk about, but it doesn't fit in that week's topic, so we don't talk about it. And, you know, we kind of want to be a little more indulgent, frankly, and talk about that stuff, because I think it's kind of relevant. And
yeah, I had that moment a couple of weeks ago where something happened and I was like, boy, this would be great to talk about on the show. And then I thought, but when? would we do that? Could we shoehorn that into a topic? And like, yeah, to your point, I feel like we have covered sort of all the basics that we have experience with and that we know anything about. You know, we're not experts. This is not a, you know, business entrepreneurship podcast where we say that we are experts about everything you should do. This is much more about like how we are coping with our journeys as independent workers. And so, now that we've kind of run out, that this was the choice, is do we continue talking about our journeys, or do we kind of delve into subjects that we don't actually know a whole lot about? We got a very nice email from somebody saying, I'd like you to talk about HR. And it was a very nice email. It was a great email from a very nice listener. And I thought about responding. And then before I did, David responded and said, basically, thank you so much for writing. We don't know anything about HR, right? Yeah. And so I think we're making a concerted decision to have the show. We're going to keep doing interviews, alternating with what I would call kind of like a regular podcast episode, where we talk about what's been going on in our lives as independent workers and how that has affected us and decisions we've made and struggles that we've had. We'll try to do mentions of other conversations that we think are interesting about these subjects, if we see links or podcast episodes about them. And we hope to regularly incorporate your feedback and questions into the show. So if you want to think about it as sort of like every month we'll do a regular episode where we talk and have links and do follow up and listener questions, and then every month we'll also do an interview show. That's sort of what we're planning on doing with this.
That's a good summary.
So I think it's going to be good, and we'll tweak it as we go. And I do think this is one of those lessons of analysis of, we've been doing it for a little while. It's worth looking at what were our assumptions going in? How has it progressed? How has it changed? And it's always worth looking at the stuff that you're doing every so often. It's almost like you should set a timer for it, or put a calendar event, or at the very least have that, hopefully, a timer that goes off in your brain that says you're doing it the same way every month, but is it working? Like, it was working last time you checked, but how long has it been since you checked? And when I lifted my head up and thought about free agents, this is what I came to. It's like, I feel like we're running out of those topics that excite me. And I just kind of want to go back to, what's funny is, go back to the original genesis of this podcast, which is you and I having a conversation about the journey that we were taking. And so I'm hoping we can kind of capture a little bit more of that in these episodes.
Amen, brother.
And with that, I'm going to move on to essentially a follow-up section, like many other podcasts do, although it's really more of a follow-out section, where I'm going to tell you about a couple of things that are happening out in the world that I think are worth noting. We had a couple of people on the Facebook page point to an episode of Under the Radar here on Relay FM, episode 102. And this is, if you don't know, this is a podcast about sort of iOS development and marketing by David Smith and Marco Arment, who are independent iOS developers. I think I can reveal that Marco will be our guest on our next episode.
Yeah.
So people should check in for that. But this episode's really interesting because it's called Procrastaworking, and it is about both of these guys having this one particular set of behavior that I really recognized in myself. I don't know if you do this, David, but it's, as the episode description says, procrastinating by working on other productive tasks instead of the big one we really don't want to do. And I do this all the time. I did this back when I worked for the man. I do it now, which is, there's this big thing that I need to do and I don't want to do it. And so I solve the problem by working on something else, right? Something else that needs to get done, but that is not the thing that I should probably be doing right now. And I'm of two minds on that. Sometimes I feel like that's actually good, because all that stuff does need to get done. The danger is if you're doing something that needs to be done in the next month and avoiding something that needs to be done in the next day, because those two things are not the same. So do you do this?
I have a gold star in procrastination. I'm very good at it.
Yeah. It's a, it's human nature in a way. I mean, what's nice about it is, the other way to do this is to just procrastinate and not do anything helpful. And I do that less often, although every now and then I find myself vacuuming or, cleaning out a corner of the house or something, and realize, why am I doing, or mowing the lawn. And it's like, why did I choose to do this right now? And the answer is, because, again, I'm avoiding the work, or just watching a baseball game. I suppose that could also happen. So this is more productive as an independent worker. We talk about it. You need to do a whole sorts of things that you didn't used to have to do, because you need to manage your business. And that can go, that's good stuff for procrastinating, right? But as long as you don't lose sight of the fact that you do actually have to do those tasks eventually.
Yeah, in fact, the thing that I'm excited about this month and talking about later in the show is all about this problem, because I am trying to hold myself more accountable. And And it's kind of scary as I'm starting to see the results.
All right. So we'll dive into that a little bit more. I had one other link that we'll put in the show notes as well, which is a story on MacStories.net by John Voorhees, who's been contributing to them for quite a while. And he's the author of a couple of iOS apps that I use all the time. Blink and Associate, or Associate, depending on how you want to pronounce that word. And it's called My App Story. And it's about John going from being a lawyer to being a lawyer with a side business doing software development and writing about Apple stuff to quitting his job as a lawyer and just doing the Apple stuff full time. Sound familiar, David?
Yeah. John's a good friend. And him and I have talked a lot because we have a similar journey. And he took it a little bit further than I did. He just stopped being a lawyer, whereas I'm still kind of living in both worlds. But he just did that. And he wrote a great piece about it over at Mac Stories.
And if you want to know more, our plan is that John will be our November guest for Free Agents. So come back for that. That should be a really great conversation. All right. That's the follow-up section. That's new. There it is.
Wow.
How are we doing so far?
Well, Jason.
All right. I'm on a lot of podcasts, David. I do a lot of podcasts. So, David, you mentioned it. We should talk about it. What's going on with you and analyzing what you're doing?
Going back to episode one of Free Agents, I was listening to it the other day, just as we were thinking about rebooting the show, I wanted to kind of go back. And it's funny because as we started the show was when I had made the decision I'm going to stop being a trial lawyer, which takes a tremendous amount of time, very lucrative. It's, if you go back and listen to the first show, you hear me explain why I decided to make a lot less money. And, but I feel like I started the journey there, but I didn't really finish it, if that makes sense. I guess that kind of relates to John's idea. It's very difficult to do two things, to be a lawyer, a business lawyer, and also to write books and do the kinds of things I do for Max Sparky. And yet I'm not willing to go all in one direction or the other. I actually enjoy a great deal both of my jobs. But I wanted, when I started this journey, to get better at balancing them, And that was the whole reason I left the firm, because the firm, they took so much of my time that I didn't have control over. And I said, well, if I would only, get out of here and be in control of my own destiny, I would do a better job of managing my time. So I would have more time to do projects that are important to me. And I had a limited degree of success with that. But now that I've been out a couple of years, I realize that in a lot of ways I've been building my own traps that I was in at the old place, but I've been making them myself, and it's really led me to question. I finally got a new book out. I mean, it took me a year and a half, but it's I did a book with Brett Terpstra. It's a tips book, which is one of the easier projects for me to do in terms of writing a book. It took about 3 months, but there's another book I started writing before I left the firm that still hasn't been released. It's got a lot of words in it and a lot of work involved. And I started thinking, well, why is it that I can't get this thing done? And I decided to kind of go back to the basics. So the obsession I've had the last couple of weeks is figuring a way to get better at figuring out how I'm spending my time. The other thing that kicked this off for me is I started working with my accountant on my taxes. And I was looking at how much money I earn on the various things I do. And I was thinking that in comparison to the amount of time I spend on them. Like, I mean, I'm not getting rich, but I'm doing okay with the books and stuff I make. And yet I still don't give them, I give them a fraction of the time that I give the legal and some of the other stuff I'm doing in my life. So, I want to, get better at figuring out, I want to make changes, I guess is the thing. So, I don't want to make changes blindly. I want to get smart about it. So I've decided I'm going to be really good at tracking my time for a little while and seeing how I'm spending it. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep. Totally. Totally get it. I mean, right. I feel like I've been in some of those same circumstances where you feel like you're sliding back into ways you've done it before, and you look around and say, so much time has passed in this project that I always had right on the horizon, and it's never happened.
Yeah, something super important to me, I'm super passionate about. And then I find every day I spend an hour answering email and an hour you know, dealing with some other nonsense. And I started realizing, is all this stuff more important to me than this project that I want to finish? And obviously it's not. So, but nonetheless, I've let myself make that project, you know, the last in line of everything I do. And so I want to figure that out. So I didn't just start cutting things. I decided I was going to go about this smart. And another show I would reference is Gray and Mike on
Cortex.
Sorry.
Cortex.
I have a cold.
One with a monkey brain. Yeah, I know.
I'm heavily medicated today, I'll tell you.
Okay. It's a special medicated edition of Free Agents.
Yes, there you go. So they did a thing on tracking time. And as a lawyer, you always track your time because a lot of the work you do is based on how much time you spend for clients. But I'd never really done a global, you know, track your time thing. So I started using, we have this great app. In fact, they were sponsored our show called Timing that works on the Mac. So I can use Timing to keep track of what I'm doing on the Mac. And then I also wanted to keep track of time I was spending elsewhere. So I started using this app Toggle, which Federico and Mike and everybody is a big fan of. And I've created a bunch of workflows so I can kind of script and make it easy to push the button to track the time. And I've been doing that religiously for the last couple of weeks. And I'm going to continue as we record the show. October is not over, but by the end of October, I'm going to have a nice pile of good data. So I can really see where is my time going? How much time am I spending on email for Max Sparky versus law? How much time, you know, all this stuff that I'm doing. And I also am kind of thinking about it in terms of how many of these things really need to be a priority? How many of these things actually need to be done? How many things can I give to somebody else to do? Maybe hire somebody to do some of these things for me. But I want to get better at managing what I'm doing. And I think fundamentally, I think right now the first thing I need to do is get my arms around what it is I'm doing. Because some of the data collection stuff I'm already finding is really off. Like I thought I was spending a lot of time in OmniFocus, you know, which is the task manager. And I got thinking, well, maybe that's my procrastinating. It's sitting in there and fiddling with my tasks for hours a day so I don't get anything done. But I'm finding I don't. I mean, I'm maybe spending 2 hours a week with task management, which, you know, if you put that over 7 days, it's really not that bad. But I'm spending a lot more time in email than I thought I was. And so I'm just learning things that I didn't know. And I think that's a really good step for me, is getting my arms around what's happening. But I don't really have any answers right now, but this is something that's definitely on my mind right now. My expectations are open right now. I just want to get the data and then figure it out. But I know that I need to make changes because I'm not happy. And I'm not sure where that all goes.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I've definitely done some of this analysis myself, and I need to do more too. I can't decide how much of the tracking is the using the data from the tracking, and how much of it is knowing the truth of what is being tracked and changing my behavior because I know that truth is being tracked. If that makes, the way I describe
like
this,
the experiment affects the subject.
Yeah, exactly right. Like when I was counting calories, which I did for a while, because I was trying to lose weight, and which I did, and I was very grumpy because I wasn't eating enough is what was happening. My wife was like, "You are very grumpy now and unpleasant to be around. Maybe eat some more." When I was doing that, I realized very rapidly that after an initial period of time where I kind of understood the data and started to understand how many calories everything was that I ate and what things were fewer calories and what things were more and what my habits were. After that kind of brief reconfiguration period, I continued to track, but the tracking no longer mattered because I had internalized sort of like the truth about where I was in that case, eating calories that were a waste and didn't provide the joy in return for the cost, if that makes any sense. And
yeah.
I feel like that is the truth of some of this timing stuff is at some point what you get is insight, which is whether you're using Timing app or a Toggle, or there are lots of other time trackers out there, and Timing as a past sponsor didn't sponsor this episode, so we're just kind of talking about them, but full disclosure. I wonder how much of it is ongoing data feedback, or whether it really is just sort of like getting through that first moment of realization of like, oh, I see what I do. Like, I see that I think I'm being productive, but then the web browser opens for 40 minutes and it seems like no time has passed, but an entire, you know, almost hour goes by where there's nothing. Or alternately, you look at it and say, wow, I do this thing and it takes a whole lot of time. And it's like the empty calories analogy. It's really not like, now that I know how much I spend on this and I know how much it matters to me in terms of, you know, life or in terms of revenue for your business. And you realize, oh, like now that I know how much time I'm spending in it, it really is a bad move. I need to do less of that. But, it, you know, that you have to have that moment of realization.
Yeah, I don't see myself continuing to track time as aggressively as I am now. Once I kind of figure this out, to me, it's a diagnostic step. I don't need to know, you know, to the minute how much time I spend writing posts or whatever, but I need to get an idea of where I'm spending my time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely it. And for me, it's very similar. Like, there are different parts, especially if you're trying to open up a hole in your schedule, which is what you're trying to do and what I really would like to do too, which is, how do I find more time to do what I want to do? And one way you do that is you take inventory, you find out where you're spending all your time, you find out what, you know, essentially, without necessarily, some people make a spreadsheet, but I think mentally you rank the and weight all of those projects and you see which ones are out of whack. And that gives you a chance to kick things out or change your behavior or deprioritize things, or some combination of all of those things, to open a hole so that you can put in your case, getting those books out. And for me, it might be working on updating my photos book that I'm doing, or it could be finishing the rewrite of my novel that I've been slowly not doing for a year and a half. And, you know, but you can't change your behavior. Well, you can, but it's like, it's better to change it in an educated way, because you realize, you know, oh, now I see where I'm wasting that time, or not spending it, not always wasting, like not spending it wisely.
Yeah. Well, what I can say is right now, the situation is not acceptable. I mean, I'm generally working 7 days a week and not being smart and wise about what I'm doing, and I'm going to make changes. I don't know what they are. I already have an idea of some of the changes I'm going to make, but my goal is at some point in the future, and I guess this is a journey we'll go on with the show, is is I'm going to, not only am I going to be have time to do the things that are most important to me, I'm going to have time to do nothing as well. So I just have to figure out how that's going to come together, but I'm working on it.
All right.
You know, one other thing that's on my mind right now is, it's just kind of an update, is I just opened my health insurance update yesterday, got it in the mail. And I was getting, when I first left the firm, my insurance was $1,500 a month for the family before. Starting next year, it goes up to $2,000. So I'm going to be spending $24,000 a year on insurance. So those of you out there thinking about making a move, be aware, you know, this stuff is not cheap.
Yeah, and it's shifting, and we don't know where it's going to go next, because there's, you know, concern about healthcare markets in the U.S. based on fund, and it's not even like changing the law, but it's like changing the funding
everything
method of, it's just, it's a mess. So it is, this is one of those things where my shift from being somebody who has nobody in the house making working full time to having one person who's working full time in a regular job, which is my wife, who's a librarian now full time, and she has benefits, and that has been a big change in terms of the calculus of our business, right? Because now the healthcare stuff is no longer part of the cost of running the business, which is previously what we did, is that the business had a benefit that was paying for our healthcare, and so that came out of the business, and now it doesn't, and that changes our finances there, but it also really declutters, uncomplicates the calculation of like what our household costs are, because now suddenly we've got one person. So that's a huge thing. And I do hear from a lot of people who say that the reason they are able to do be a free agent is because their partner has benefits, and it's a lot harder if nobody does.
Well, my second daughter is heading off to college in a couple of years, and as that happens, my wife and I are talking. That may change in my house too. I mean, Daisy may end up going back to work at some point, and those are the things that come into the equation.
Yeah, let's. I've got some things that I want to talk about, but let's take a break first to talk about our sponsor. Our sponsor is FreshBooks. All you free agents out there, you know how important it is to make smart decisions for your business. Our friends at FreshBooks can save you up to, this is a very precise number, 192 hours with their cloud accounting software for freelancers. It's ridiculously easy to use. It simplifies tasks like invoicing, tracking expenses, and getting paid online, which lets FreshBooks drastically reduce the time it takes for you and 10 million other people to deal with paperwork. FreshBooks automates late payment email reminders so you can spend less time checking to see if all your clients have paid you or not, and then remind them and the whole dance that you have to do. And instead, you can focus more on why you became a free agent, the actual work itself. And when you email a client an invoice, FreshBooks shows you whether they've seen it. So you don't have to guess. You don't have to wonder. There's no stress there. You know that they've seen it. You know it's been delivered. Basically, FreshBooks is acting as your billing agent. It's sending the reminders. It's just don't worry about it anymore. Let the computer worry about it, and you don't have to. And you can go back to your work. It's a great idea. There are more than 10 million users of FreshBooks, like I said, but they are still a pretty small company. They're on Forbes' list of best small companies last year as a small giant. And if you're listening to free agents and not using FreshBooks yet, you should really give it a try. It may change how you manage your business. FreshBooks is offering an unrestricted 30-day free trial for listeners of free agents. No credit card is required. No risk. You just sign up at FreshBooks.com/freeagents and enter free agents in the how did you hear about us section so they know that we sent you. Thank you to FreshBooks for supporting free agents.
So Jason, what's on your mind this month?
I had a couple of stories. I think these are the things that I mentioned at the top that I thought, oh, I'd like to talk to David about that. When will we do that? And one of them is, it's similar to what you said. For me, it's sort of like figuring out when to say no to projects and having the information and the mindset to be able to turn down paying work. And we've talked about this on the show many times, but it keeps coming up for me. And I realize this is one of those areas where I keep kind of backsliding or going back into a default mindset, and it can get frustrating. I had a moment where I needed to, for a story that I'll tell in a little bit, I needed to figure out what was the overall income that I'm generating. Like, day to day, first off, you know, a lot of what I do, it's kind of beneath the waves. I've got some membership stuff for Six Colors. I've got membership stuff for The Incomparable. That's not as visible. I've got freelance that's a little more visible, although, again, once you're writing something every month or every week, the amount of money that you're earning is no longer negotiated. It just sort of happens as you turn in the work. And that is very easy to ignore. And you know what? You lose sight. I get, you know, paid for doing podcasts and stuff, but those are like all auto paid and they go into the bank account. And Lauren is my business manager, basically. So yeah. She sees those numbers more than I do. I don't see them very, very often. And so I had this request of her, which is, can you tell me what our income is? Like, what does my business generate for us? Like, give me what would have been easy before, which everybody generally knows, which is, what is your salary? And I didn't know. I like literally didn't know. And what I found is, my assumption is that it's bad and falling and everything is bad and I need to work harder, because if I don't keep kicking my legs in the pool, we will just sink to the bottom. And yes. Right? That's just
me too.
That's my mindset. That's the default.
Yeah, I know. It's tough.
And so, the way that behavior, what that behavior leads to is that every time I get an email from somebody, it's usually an old colleague at some website or other who says, I've got this freelance story that I'll pay you $500 for or $300 for or whatever it is. And I look at it and think, well, I could do that and that wouldn't take too much time and it's money. And I say yes. And that happens every time. I say yes, I take the work, I add it to my pile. And that has two effects, which is, now I'm working more, even more. I added it to a pretty full stack already. And it also means that in my particular case, it may also mean that I'm now spending time on that instead of kind of ongoing business development whether that's more content for Six Colors or membership things or something for The Incomparable or, you know, some other, or working on that book that I want to update, right? That, yeah, which is less visible gets deferred sort of silently. It gets deferred. It gets shrunk. But I kept saying, yeah. So anyway, I get the number, and I found that the income, big surprise, the income that my business is generating, way above what I've internalized, that we're doing great. We're supporting our family. It's not one of those things where you look at it and go, oh boy, I can just stop working because we made so much money. It's not like that, but it's
not,
like
not buying the condo in Hawaii.
No, nothing like that. But like, it's going well. It's going fine. Like, And it was that moment where I thought, why am I taking these extra $300-$400 writing assignments that suck up a day, and push my work into the weekend or into the evenings or whatever, when we're doing fine? Like, why would I do that? Like, it's easy to talk about this if you are turning down work, and there are, I want to be understanding of the people that sometimes people really are struggling and trying to find work, and you're never going to turn it down. But there does come a point where it doesn't make sense to accept certain work because it's not worth the time, because you're already at the limit of what you could do or beyond the limit of what you could do. And that was what I realized. And that was great because I got to internalize, at least for a while until I forget again, I get to internalize that we're doing better and that my judgments about what work I should prioritize should be reset to, you know, new levels and new priorities, which is great. Except, you know what happens next, right? Which is, I tell myself, okay, we're doing okay, so I cannot do all this work. And this is, I've never thought of myself as a workaholic. I don't think I am. I think it's a dumb term too, because it means you're addicted to workahol, which is not a thing. So, but I can see the mindset now. I understand it on a level that I never did before. And it's this, which is, then I say to myself, I'm going to free up space to do other projects or to not work at certain times where I've been working all this time because I've been working really hard. And that's great, except then I get the buzz, the paranoia in the back of my head when I'm not working that says, uh-oh, you're not working. This is bad. Which is a real struggle that I'm having, which is, how do I truly grant myself, as my own boss, how does my inner boss grant myself permission to not think about work for a while, not be working on a project, to sit on the couch and watch a baseball game? Like, again, I don't want to be irresponsible. I don't want to say, oh, this week I'm just not working because I don't feel like it. But I also want to grant myself the ability to truly stop work for a little while because I don't need to work. And that, getting that machine to stop, the one that drives me the rest of the time, is a real struggle.
I have to admit, you know, like my mom, I talked about in the extra show, or the show when we talked about my origin story. You know, my parents were in the Depression, and they told me the stories all the time growing up. And my mom's family had it really hard. They didn't have any money. They moved into an abandoned cabin, and just, you know, like when we had all those foreclosures a few years ago, all those people losing their homes, I would wake up in sweats sometimes for no reason at all. I mean, I've got enough money, I can pay my house payment, but there's part of me that is just terrified that I'm going to make some mistake at some point where we're just going to lose everything. And it's not even rational, but it's part of me. And I have a huge problem with saying no as a result of that. And the thing I've been trying to focus on is finding small victories in this. Like, lately, I've realized I say yes to almost every legal client that walks in the door when I shouldn't. And can I start saying no to people? Maybe because it's not the kind of work I want to do, or maybe I don't think it's the right fit with the person. And how much happier would I be if I did a little bit less of this? And, but it is hard. I think you and I both struggle with this.
Yeah. And again, on one level, it's a really good problem to have because it means you do have work and you are able to support your family and you are bringing in money. But at the same time, yeah, it can be, just really corrosive to your, you know, to your life.
Yeah, and there's a real cost to your business, too. I mean, the opportunity cost. When you say yes to everything, it really doesn't allow you to say yes to the big things, to the important things. And you're devaluing yourself. I mean, it's logically I understand, but emotionally I have a real hard time with this.
Yeah. So this is part of my constant struggle, and like I said, I feel like the challenge for me is just to continue to remind myself of how I'm doing. Like, I need to get every I've talked to Lauren about the idea of doing like quarterly reports or something, where I get reminded of the fact that we're fine, right? Just yeah. So that I can. And again, and also be warned if we're not fine, but I'm going to assume that the moment I looked away, everything went terrible, right? And now everything is ruined. That's me. I'm going to assume that. So I need to do better at reminding myself, and so that I can properly calibrate what my decisions are about working. So I'm not saying, oh, well, I have to do this, and this means that I'm going to work all night or all weekend or whatever. And that happens from time to time, but it needs to happen for good reasons, not for dumb reasons that you would never trade. We had this with Lauren when she was working part-time at one point, and I had just gone out on my own, and she picked up this extra shift that was incredibly inconvenient. It got in the way of like all the things we were doing and stuff with the kids and all of that. And at one point we finally sat there and looked at what she was getting paid for these like 3 hours in the middle of the one day she didn't have anything else going on. And we were like, this isn't worth it. Like, what the small amount of money you're getting for at a not great rate for 3 hours in the middle of the day, so you can't do anything else with your Friday, like the kids or shopping or, you know, other or the doing the books for the incomparable, right? And we did the same process, which is, oh, this is not worth our time, because it's just going to for what they're paying us. Like, if somebody came up to you and said, I'd like you to leave your house or leave your office for 3 hours in the middle of Friday, and I'll pay you $100 every week. Some people would take that deal, cause it's like, that's $100. But a lot of us would be like, wow, that's a real imposition on all the other things I'm working on for not enough money to make it worth it. But you got to see it. You got to translate it to that, which is hard.
Well, I guess the theme today is, but I'm looking at how I'm spending my time. You're looking at where your money's coming from. I think both of those are really good ways to try and figure out the best way to go about this.
Yeah. I have a related story, which is the reason that I looked at my overall income, and I'm going to tell it in a very sort of simplified, shadowed way, just because I think it's interesting. I haven't told it anywhere, and it's another kind of mindset thing, which is, we've talked about it before, like, just because I'm out on my own and I'm very happy, I still have people talk about like jobs that come up, and I still have a part of me that's like, oh, that's a real job. I should look at that. Should I be interested in that? Should I get a real job? It still happens. Like, still happens all the time because there's something deep inside me that's like, yeah, what you're doing now, you know, it's not a real job. There's real jobs out there. So I got approached by somebody I used to work with, and there's, you know, people who know my background, you could generate some conspiracy theories. I can guarantee you don't know who this person is. So there are going to be lots of like, oh, it's one of those guys who went to Apple and that's who approached Jason, and it's not. So I'll just throw that out there. But I did get approached by somebody I used to work with about a job. And he has a very interesting job at a high profile company in a I'd say major part of the company, and he said, we have this potential job, and when we discussed it, I thought of the traits of this person, this potential job slot, and I thought of you, and even though we haven't worked together for a while, I thought you would be perfect for this. Would you like to talk about this? Now I had that moment, which is like, well, this is weird, and it seems unlikely to progress, and it comes out of the blue. But at the same time, I was kind of curious. It is a high profile company and job, and I had that moment of like, there's no harm in talking, right? But what, and it was a whole process. I talked to somebody else. It did sound like an interesting job. It's very different. It's using sort of like the other part of my business skill set that I don't use as an independent worker that I did use when I was working for the man. And just kind of a fascinating look into how this company does this potential, you know, particular part of their business. And so, we, you know, I talked to a couple of people there and we set up an interview, and like the day before I was supposed to have the interview, they said, oh, that position's been eliminated, which really reminded me of back in the day when I was working for the man, and that kind of crap happened all the time. And it's like, you guys approached me and asked me all these questions and, you know, had me set up travel and all of this stuff. And then at the last minute, you're like,
existential hell.
Never mind. Never mind. Never mind. But what I got out of it, what that was really valuable was I had that moment, and Lauren and I were just, you know, taking a walk, walking the dog, and we were talking about it. And I said, the thing is, what would it take for a, in this case, put it in perspective, what would it take for a very high profile company to hire me to be in charge of a portion of a business that is, you know, worth a huge amount of money to that company? Like, that's kind of wacky. And again, whatever you're guessing, that's not what it was. It's super weird and tangential. So don't, no conspiracy theories, please. But, and so it's like, wow, this is like, the reason I'm even talking to them is that this is a totally weird, but fascinating, potential challenge. So it's like, why not see where they're going? But what I realized as I was talking to Lauren about it, and this is why we looked up like the income and the fact that I work at home and all of these other things, I started to realize this huge company that everybody in the world knows and this major part of their business that I would have a, you know, if I had taken this job, if it had been offered, et cetera, had been a big, like a big part of that. I had a hard time imagining how they would ever offer me a job that I would want to take. And that was a useful journey. I was like, would I relocate for them? Would I work out of their San Francisco office for them? Would I do what some people do, which is like work from home 2 or 3 days a week and then fly to their location for a couple of days? You know, would I move my family? Would I tear up my travel? Would I'd have to give up all my existing business? I started to think of all of these things. And then I thought about what I make and how I work and the fact that I can do it all from home. And it was really a kind of an amazing moment where I thought, this is almost the, it's not the perfect job. It was different and a little bit unusual. I think it would have been very interesting if we had gone further with it to find out exactly what they were thinking. But it's not a bad example of like, what if somebody just knocked on your door and said, hey, old buddy, we used to work together. I work for a giant company now. We have this awesome job. We want to hire you from it. Would you say yes? And I realized, I bet not. Like, unless I find it hard to believe that they would make an offer so great that it would be better in terms of money and life than what I'm doing. And so that was kind of a great moment. It was annoying that they canceled it all the day before, although it was kind of a relief too, because it was like, that's gonna save me a day of travel and job interviews. But it did put my current status in perspective, which may be a long way of saying the thing that we talk about when with our interviews all the time, which is maybe I am kind of ruined for a job like that, or certainly things are going well enough in my business right now that it would be very hard for me to leave it and do something else, because I have a hard time seeing, it would have to be the kind of thing that would make me stop doing what I'm doing, I think, is the kind of thing that doesn't actually exist. It's literally in the realm of fantasy, where somebody just parachutes in and says, we'd like to hire you and we'll pay you $2 million a year to, you know, to, talk to people all day or something like that. It's things that don't exist are the only things that I think could beat what I'm doing now. And that was a great perspective to have.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't, you know, for me, you know, the fantasy job just isn't out there. There is no job for a Max Barkey. That's an independent thing as it exists, and going into a law firm, to me, it's just not even an option.
Well, there's a variety issue with me and with you too, which is, and you just said it, which is that job, that mythical job that could come and sweep you away is never going to be as varied and touch, you know, you've built and I've built businesses that are kind of like the stuff we know how to do and like to do and have mixed them together. And yeah, we can fret over the mixture and if we're spending too much time on this and all of that, but ultimately, like, a job that comes down the pike is not going to be like that. It's going to be doing X. And it, you know, and so that's going to be part of it, is any job that came down the pike, I'm going to look at it and say, well, that obviously has something related to what I'm doing, or otherwise you wouldn't be interested in me. But it doesn't have, it's never going to have all the things, right? Never. It's not possible for it to have all the things that we are able to assemble for ourselves. And that's, I think that's part of the truth of being out on your own, is that you know, one of the great strengths of this approach is that you get to assemble a combination of work, ideally, that is the perfect fit for you.
And it's your obligation to make it work.
Yeah.
If you want to continue the privilege.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was my, looking up my income gave me sort of one set of mental gymnastics, but I did get a kind of a shot in the arm about what I'm doing now, which I always have those moments of, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? And this was a moment of like, wow, I must be doing the right thing to a certain degree, because I can't envision a job that would blow me away to the point. I just realizing it would take a lot for me to want to make a life change right now.
It's funny, because it was what really triggered me into this whole time tracking thing, was realizing that, you know, I make okay money doing some of this stuff that I keep putting on the back burner.
Right.
And I really like that stuff. So how come I'm doing this to myself? And so that's, I'm in my very plodding way trying to fix that. But the income source is a good starting point for all this.
All right. We have one letter that I want to read from a listener, but we would like to do more listener feedback. So here's what you should do. You can tweet at us at Free Agents FM if you want to do that. I signed up for that. So that's the account. I want to get it right. Free Agents FM. There's no underscore. It's just Free Agents FM.
Yeah.
Or you can go to relay.fm/freeagents. And there's a contact link there that emails an address that goes to both David and myself. So that's a great way to send us feedback. And the Free Agents group on Twitter, which is, on Facebook, which is facebook.com/groups/freeagentsgroup, is another place that you can post comments and questions, and we will check there too, because we're going to do this every month in this segment. I also wanted to mention, we are doing a podcast listener survey. If you go to podcastlistener.com/freeagents, it is a demographic survey that tells our potential advertisers who you are broadly, not like you personally. And that helps the good people at Relay sell ads for this show, which is very helpful for us to keep doing it, because we are trying to prioritize, as you've just heard, our businesses. And we want free agents to be part of what we do. But that would be helpful, not mandatory, but it would be helpful if you did podcastlistener.com/freeagents.
Yeah, if you don't mind taking a few minutes to do that, we really would appreciate it.
Yeah, it would be very helpful. But and if you're not comfortable answering demographic questions, it is anonymized, but that's fine. If you're not comfortable, don't do it. But it will help us if you do. So the letter that I wanted to talk about, we got like last week,
yeah.
And it's from Bruno. And there's a nice comment here, and then a little bit of a tangent that I think is cool. Bruno wrote in and said, "I'm a full-time professor. As professors, we do need to work as free agents. I work a lot from home, and I don't have a boss telling me what to do every day. Additionally, as many full-time professors, I do freelance work and am involved in different projects not directly related to the classroom. So there's a lot in the life of a professor that overlaps with the life of a free agent." Now, there's a second part that I'll read in a second, but you and I have heard, David, and I think both of us have been surprised,
yes,
from a lot of people in academia who say, I know you're talking about being an independent worker, but being in academia, we deal with everything you talk about.
I'm shocked at the number of professors we hear from, and we also hear from a lot of preachers, people who are, and this stuff overlaps. I can see it now, but I never would have expected that when we started this show.
Yeah, what they have in common, I guess, is that, you know, like Bruno says, there's no boss in that sense. Like you have your, I think for a lot of professors, you know, you have your teaching and maybe you have your research and then you've got other side projects, you've got stuff going on, but you've got to kind of manage it. You're the boss of your career in a way that is very different than if you just are in a hierarchical organization and you come in and punch the clock and they do what they tell you and then punch the clock at the end, or the, you know, the equivalent of that. That once it gets more loosey-goosey and you've got side things that you're doing and you have to kind of chart your own path, and people who are preachers, reverends, pastors, all of that, where they've got kind of like, there's church and there, yes, there is a kind of like church over them, but it's not quite the same and they kind of have to make their own way and figure out how they're doing it. So that's, it's fun to hear, I guess, that what we're doing is more applicable than we thought.
Yeah. I always like hearing when the show reaches someone that I never expected it would. It's great.
It's pretty cool. So Bruno goes on and says, a few weeks ago, Aline Sims mentioned that she teaches part-time. And of course, she's not the only free agent who teaches part-time, but not all free agents may realize many schools would be thrilled to have experienced practitioners as part-time lecturers. Maybe you can talk on the show about how you can go and reach a local university or college and pursue this possibility of income, which I think is really interesting. I have taught at the journalism school at UC Berkeley. I also taught some stuff at my local library, actually, that they wanted to do a class teaching teenagers how to podcast. And I did that. That was kind of a fun give back thing. They didn't pay me very much for it, and it was fine. But the UC Berkeley teaching was giving back, but also it was a part-time job. And it was fun, and they paid me. And that allowed me to kind of do it. And I hope to do that again at some point down the road, is teach something at Berkeley related to something that I do and have knowledge of. And I think Bruno is right. Like, this is another way. I mean, a school is probably not going to be like your big income source, but if, you know, it could be an income source and also be a way for you to do something a little different and share your expertise in whatever it is you do. I do know some people where it has become a primary income source, where they start teaching a little bit and they like it and the people there like them, and then they teach it more, and then all of a sudden they're, you know, half of what they do is teaching and half of what they do is their job, and they make that work too. So it can vary. But if you're not thinking of this, it may never occur to you that, as Bruno says, sometimes these schools really love when there's a professional person who can teach a class. And guess what? People with nine to five jobs,
they can't
do it. I mean, they could do maybe a night class, but even then, as somebody who had a 9-to-5 job and taught a night class, like, even that is kind of brutal. If you don't have a flexible schedule, it's much harder to be a teacher. And so if you're a free agent and an expert in an area and you've got a local university or college or something, yeah, do you know somebody there? Do you want to maybe introduce yourself to a dean or a staff member or something like that, and say, I'm local and I have this experience. If you ever want to teach, you know, somebody to teach a course or do a guest lecture or something, and just have them get to know you, because you'd be surprised. A lot of times they are desperately looking for people who are capable of teaching some of these topics. And if you could be somebody who gets put in their address book, then maybe they won't call on you right away, but then something will come up and they'll be like, oh, you know, there's that person who does this. And then all of a sudden they call you and you're teaching a class.
Yeah, and that doesn't just apply to schools. I am one of the ways I make money is a lot of times I get hired by law firms to come in and talk to their lawyers about how to use technology and, you know, how to give a good presentation. I've got, you know, a variety of different, you know, little things I do. And so two or three times a year, I'll go to a law firm retreat. A lot of times these big firms have retreats, and then they have people come in to talk to the members of the firm. And I do that, and I charge money for it. So, I mean, it is definitely, teaching is another side thing you can do. And like we've said so many times on the show, so much of this free agency thing is just getting multiple income streams. Well, there's another opportunity for you.
Yeah. Well, I think we've reached the end of this, our experimental first podcast episode. But I thought it went pretty well.
Yeah, I like it. I feel like we did a good thing by getting through those subjects to begin with and kind of getting a foundation. That's a free agents 101. And now we can kind of get into deeper the stuff that's really, that we're struggling with, and the stuff that
the
we're
ongoing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ongoing stuff. Absolutely. But we'll be back in a fortnight with another interview show. Like we said, Marco Arment is going to join us. And then next month, we'll be back with another one of these episodes. So please, again, send in your questions. Relay.fm/freeagents for the contact link is probably the best way. Send us an email. You've got questions, comments, a little bit of a story, some suggestions like the ones we got from Bruno today. It would be great to hear from you. And until the next fortnight, David, it's been a pleasure as always.
See you in 2 weeks.